Welcome to the Why Not Today podcast, an inspirational podcast where we celebrate courage, personal growth, and the power of saying, why not today? I'm your host, Leslie Kane, and I believe that we're just one brave step can change everything. Each episode, we share real stories from people who've taken bold actions, faced their fears, and embraced the possibility of today. From entrepreneurs to artists to everyday dreamers and doers, we explore the life-changing moments that start with a simple question, why not today? I created this podcast in honor of my father, Patrick Kane, who lived by those very words. Join me as we uncover the powerful stories of hope, connection, resilience, and transformation. Whether it's pursuing a passion, overcoming obstacles, or choosing joy, our guests will inspire you to live with a life with purpose and courage. And just FYI, I always share that I do not edit these episodes, and that's part of the Why Not Today message, that you just got to do it and start. And so what you're going to hear is a real conversation. Raw, real, everything in between. So my guest today is Jenny Atwood Lovett, and she is somebody I met through my sister Alicia. And then other people have said, oh, you got to meet Jenny. And everybody keeps talking about Jenny. And we've been trying to connect for a while. We had a long conversation last year, but I really wanted to have Jenny on because she has a nonprofit called the Christopher Atwood Foundation. And we're going to talk about that. And I think I really admire you and the change you're making and what you're doing in spite of the obstacles in your life. And so it was not started from a happy place. And you are making a difference. And I am so adamant about we need to share this message about addiction and drugs and all the things that you think isn't going to, it's not in your backyard, but it is. And it's everywhere, and I think people are hiding it, and you never know. One of my most listened to, watched episodes was a friend of mine that I interviewed the first season that was suburban mom, two kids in high school, and she was addicted to opioids, and because of surgeries, and the doctor gave her prescriptions, and it got so bad that when she went to pick up her husband went to pick up a prescription, and the pharmacist asked if he wanted Narcan. That's how bad she was. Now she's gotten clean and it was a struggle and the recovery was terrible, but she's on the other side. We are going to do a part two. So, Miss Jenny, I'm excited to have you here. So why don't you share a little bit about who you are, not your whole courage journey, but who you are, and then we'll get started.
Well, I'm glad to be here. I think what you're doing with this podcast is awesome, so I'm honored to be part of it.
Thank you.
So I'm a lifelong Northern Virginia resident. Most people here are kind of transplants and come and go, and I've been living here my whole life. I'm a
You and
plant
me both.
lady, a crazy pug lady. I've had four pugs now.
Oh my goodness.
Um,
You have
yeah,
four now?
I no, I
Okay.
had I've had four in my life.
Okay.
I have two now. One
Okay.
is 17 and probably won't be around much longer, but I don't know. I've gotten addicted to bugs somehow. So
Okay. Good
part
for
of
you.
me. I'm a runner as well. I am currently training for a half marathon coming up this weekend, which I'm a little nervous for because I'm a little undertrained. This is my first time getting back into running in like 10 years. So
Wow.
yeah, it's a little bit about me.
All right. And I know you have a sweet son.
Yes, I have a 5-year-old. His name's Caleb, and he's just the best.
Oh, I've seen lots of pictures. He's super cute.
Yeah.
So, Jenny, what does courage mean to you?
I think courage is, to me, it's being afraid and then doing the thing anyway. And a lot of times that's because you're pursuing something bigger than yourself, or the thing that you want to do is more important than your feeling of fear, and that drive kind of overrides, the nerves and the fear and the what ifs and all of that. But at its core, I think it's being afraid and then doing it anyway, which is how I've lived my life.
Yeah, and we have to do a lot of that. And you've had a lot of ups and downs and done, and I admire the amazing things you're doing in spite of all the ups and downs and the tragedy in your life. And it hasn't been easy. So I know you have a foundation in honor of your brother. So I'd love to talk to you about that, how that started. And it's just, not in my backyard kind of thing. So we grew up in the same area, didn't go to the same high school, but same town. You went to South Lakes the year it was open is when I went to high school, and we didn't, it just opened and there wasn't enough room. So we went to her. But, you know, it just stuck with me when you told me that your brother was addicted to heroin. Is that correct? At, I don't know how old, but in high
15.
school.
15, yeah.
Teen. In a Northern Virginia, Fairfax County, highly educated, high economic, you know, all the things that look like it would be the perfect suburbia world. And yet a 15-year-old is addicted to heroin, and how scary that is.
Yeah, because I mean, what people don't understand about addiction oftentimes is that the addiction is not the problem. Usually it's the solution to the problem. So people have some kind of, undiagnosed or even diagnosed mental health issue. They have trauma. They have something going on where they're not comfortable in their bodies. And that's what I hear from people in recovery. I'm in recovery as well, is that you just don't feel comfortable being you. You don't feel comfortable in your body. There's something that you're trying to get away from, something that you're trying to numb, and everything else that you've tried doesn't work. And this is just the thing that works to numb, whatever pain is going on. And that's something that affects everybody, regardless of your background, your family, your beliefs, all of that. Everybody struggles with something. And yeah, it just so happened that Christopher was kind of with the wrong people in the wrong place at the wrong time, and just got addicted to it really early. And it took him down pretty hard, pretty fast. And we got him into treatment and all of that. Like, he didn't want to be addicted to heroin. I'm sure it was fun at first, and then it wasn't. And then, unfortunately, he struggled with it in and out of rehab for about 6 years. And then in 2013, I came home from work and I found him unresponsive. And I didn't have Narcan, which I always talk about the importance of carrying
Which
Narcan.
did you even, were you aware of it at that point?
Vaguely, I don't think I even knew what it was called. It was not accessible to the public at this point, but I'd heard about some kind of medicine that can bring people back. And I remember I had tried to find it on Craigslist because I didn't know how else. I was kind of desperate, wasn't able to. And so that was one of the first things that we did with the foundation, was making sure that there was widespread public access to Narcan.
Which, okay, so let's go back to you found your brother, which was tragic. And like you started the nonprofit pretty quickly after he passed away, didn't you?
Yeah, like days.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I thought it was pretty quick. And so, and I may have not maybe making this story up, but like you were sitting around the kitchen table with family and decided to
Yes. Yeah.
yeah, so your why not today moment became mine because I remember the conversation. So let's talk about your why not today moment and what for I don't know the word, but talk to what in
Whatever.
such grief, what motivated in such grief, what motivated you to do this?
It just so it happened. It just happened. It's hard to explain. We were sitting around, like you said, the kitchen table, just a number of days after he had passed away. And we were talking about just kind of reeling, like, what happened? How could this have happened to us? And looking at some of the gaps in care that we had slipped through. And we were just having this conversation about how, if this could happen to us, and we have all these resources in Northern Virginia, we have, we were a family of not insignificant means, and if we weren't able to get him the help and get him, save him, then what's going to happen to other people who aren't as fortunate? And it kind of the knowing that we needed to do something just landed on us kind of abruptly. And my dad just goes, "We're going to start a foundation." And we all said, "Yes."
Wow.
And just knew that we had to. And it's been really twofold, because we've been able to keep my brother's spirit alive. He was a really passionate, really empathetic, giving person. He was always helping people, always taking in stray animals and stray people. And we were able to kind of keep that giving spirit of his alive, while at the same time being able to save other people's lives. And so it's been really beautiful.
That's awesome. So, was your family into serving and nonprofits and those? Had you started a nonprofit before, or
No, we've
that's in
never
your blood
started
and your
a nonprofit.
heart?
But both of my parents were involved in the church growing up, and I was as well. You know, we've always had a church family, and so we've gotten to see, a lot of the heart for service that comes out of that. And also, I think there's like a little bit of, I don't know what word to put to it other than like a little bit of a rebellious spirit in my family, where it's like we're not afraid to do things a little bit differently, and justice is really important to us. If there's some kind of injustice happening, we're not afraid to kind of buck against the system and, put our foot down and say things have to change. So yeah, it was a little bit of that. It was a little bit of like, this system is broken. This is not working. It's not even working
Wow.
for the most fortunate of people. So it's obviously
Right.
not working for the least fortunate,
Yeah. Like, can imagine if, as you said, we're in Fairfax County. We're in Northern Virginia, right outside of DC. There's so many resources here. And yet people don't know what is available or that's even a problem. I remember I went through the Leadership Fairfax program and my project was on food insecurity. And I remember talking to a couple people. They're like, there's food insecurity in Reston in Northern Virginia. I'm like, yeah, it's all over.
And unfortunately, there's a lot of pockets. You don't think of Northern Virginia as being a place that has issues like that, but there are pockets of pretty severe disparities,
Oh,
especially
absolutely.
when it comes to racial minorities. There's a lot of health disparities and, lack of resources and insecurity and all of that.
Yeah, and all those things, I think, you are able to put your brother through rehab and try to get him help, but a lot of people don't even have those resources
Yeah, I
or
mean,
know what they're there.
a lot
Don't
of
know
it
who to reach out to.
is not knowing, and people turn to Google and they're like, what do I do? And then, they get ads from some disreputable treatment center trying to make money off of them.
Yeah.
There's some pitfalls there. And that's kind of what we've tried to do with the foundation, is not reinvent the wheel. We're not duplicating services, but we're acting as connective tissue between what's out there. So we have peer recovery specialists. All of our staff that provide services are in recovery from substance use disorder or from mental health issues themselves. And so they get it because they've been there and they've been through the system frequently in this area. And so they're able to walk people through step by step what they need, all the way from, services for people in active use into long-term recovery, and stay with them across county boundaries, because a lot of times people get into like a county service, and then if they move, because that's where the job opportunity is, then they lose all of those services and they have to start over. And so there's, even though we have sort of a what you would consider, compared to a lot of places, a resource-rich area, there's a lot of ways that people slip through cracks and gaps in care. And so our mission is to fill as many of those as we can.
Yeah, and people, if you're not in the know of things, you don't what you don't know, and you don't know those connections. You and I both grew up in this area, and I had a father that was very involved, and it sounds like your family was too, church. And if somebody needs some, I'm usually a couple phone calls away from finding a resource for somebody because I'm connected and I'm out there. But a lot of people aren't to know where those resources are. So that's why I really wanted to have you on to be able to share and give people resources and let people know everything you're doing. So explain everything you're doing or who, if somebody needs help or if somebody wants to support you guys and be a part of it and be give back.
Yeah, so like I said, everything that we do is through peer support specialists. And we're
So
in a
what
lot of,
exactly does that mean?
so a peer support specialist or a peer recovery specialist, you might also call them, hear them called recovery coaches. So they're people, they're not therapists, they're not clinicians. They're
Okay.
people who are in long-term recovery who go through a program to learn how to coach other people who are either, seeking or in recovery. And they work on all different kinds of things. It's very individual, whatever is going on in that person's life. You know, they kind of customize their support to that person. So a lot of times, so we have a program inside the Fairfax County Jail and the Prince William County Jail where we're working with people while they're incarcerated, preparing them to get out, and then we stay with them as they get out. So in that case, peer support might look like, you know, planning what their recovery supports, what meetings they're going to go to when they get out. We can provide assistance with getting basic documentation so they can get employment. Like our peers help people get birth certificates and get their social security cards and driver's licenses and very practical things like that that oftentimes can be a big barrier to people.
Why don't they have those things?
People lose everything in active addiction. Oftentimes, they don't have housing. They lose all of their documentation. You know, they lose all of their money. They're getting out of jail or getting out of treatment with absolutely nothing. And
So is this a one-to-one kind of
yes,
support?
typically we do have support groups as well at our
Okay.
recovery community center in Fairfax City.
So how is that different than what you guys are doing too? But it sounded like they go to meetings. Is that in addition to an AA or NA meeting or?
So AA, NA, there's other kinds of programs like that, like Smart Recovery. They're all what you call mutual aid. They're sort of democratically run group support, oftentimes working like a 12-step program.
Right.
And this is different because in AA or NA or things like that, you might get a sponsor and they are specifically there to help walk you through those 12 steps. It's a very specific program, but not everybody does well with the 12 steps. There's also lots of different pathways to recovery, and peer recovery specialists are trained to support all pathways to recovery. So they're much broader, and they also are a lot more, like I said, into that practical support of
Yeah,
making sure
awesome.
people, if you get out of jail and we say, okay, call your peer so you can get a ride to your recovery house so you don't go out and use again. And they're like, well, I don't have a cell phone. So we can get them a cell phone, you know, just filling those really practical gaps. Sometimes those gaps can be really, really small.
Simple stuff that seems to us, but can be life-changing for somebody else.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have that program in the jail. We're also out in the community. We're also we do a big recovery housing program. So like I said, a lot of people are getting out of treatment and jail and things like that and have nowhere to go except for back to whoever they were using with, and that's a recipe for disaster. So we get people into recovery housing. We also operate a harm reduction program out of our mobile unit that goes out 3 times a week. We're in Fairfax and Prince William County. And through that, we're giving out Narcan, which is the overdose reversal medication. We're doing syringe exchange, so people are not getting HIV and hepatitis C. We're doing testing for those bloodborne diseases as well. We're also doing a lot of wound care. I don't know if you're familiar with xylazine. I think a lot of people are familiar with fentanyl,
Yeah.
but there's a new additive that's in a lot of the opioid supply. And it's a sedative that causes really nasty circulatory issues. And so
Wow.
people are ending up with these really bad abscesses and
Oh.
wounds and infections. And so we're doing wound care from the mobile unit as well.
So
As
where are the mobile units? Are just driving around? Are you at a certain place or do
we
people?
go, we have 3 different stops. We have one near the methadone treatment center in Annandale. We have another one in the parking lot of the Jukebox Diner in Prince William. And we just started a new one at Culmore Methodist Church in Falls Church. And those exact addresses and all of the timing and everything is on our website at thecaf.org. And also, we have a warm line. I wanted to share that. It's open 9 to 5 and Monday through Friday, and it'll be answered by a peer support specialist every time. So we always encourage people if you want to have somebody to talk to who gets it, who's not going to judge you, call our warm line at 703-653-4221. And they can get you connected to care. And that's for individuals and families. A lot of what we do is also supporting families. We get a lot of calls from parents, spouses, you know, looking for help for a loved one, and we can get you plugged in too.
Well, I will definitely share that in the show notes because I think that's important. And what if somebody's listening to this in California? Can they call?
They can call, yeah. I mean, we can do what we can to try to link to local resources. We've in California, we've got a few things that we can use. We're pretty in terms of what we do and the services we directly provide, we're pretty local to Northern Virginia, but we can always link people to other services.
Okay. Yeah, it's so scary what's happening and the whole fentanyl thing. And I think one of the things you said with the mobile unit is you can get fentanyl or you have fentanyl strips.
Fentanyl test strips and xylazine test strips. Yeah. So actually, there was a report that just came out from VDH, the quarter four drug overdose report. And it's preliminary data for all of 2024. It's not quite finalized, but there is some good news, actually. It shows that overdose deaths have gone down by 35%
Wow,
in the
that's
last, yeah, in the last year. And so it's a little less dramatic than it sounds, only because we had a really massive spike during COVID, and now we're just kind of coming back down to pre-COVID levels, but it's actually going even below that. And we don't know exactly why. It's kind of a combination of things: access to Narcan, a focus on harm reduction. Those certainly play a big role. But nearly 30% of overdose deaths were caused by stimulants mixed with fentanyl. Cocaine specifically, in this report was mentioned as a big issue. And so we do give out fentanyl test strips and xylazine test strips to people who are specifically using opioids, and that's their drug of choice. But we always really encourage people, in a lot of ways, it's more important for somebody who's not intentionally using opioids to have those. Because if you're just, for instance, go into a club on a weekend and you recreationally are going to use cocaine with a friend, and you have no tolerance for opioids, and you get something laced with fentanyl, that can be a death sentence, because just a tiny amount of fentanyl can be very potent, and if you don't have a tolerance, it can take you
How
down.
do you get a tolerance just by
Just
doing
using, yeah, just like anything, if you use it often enough, your body starts to work up a tolerance to it, and so you need more and more of that thing
Okay.
to get the same effect.
Well, and I don't know if you shared this with me or somebody else, but the whole fentanyl thing just blew my, like, is I couldn't understand, like, why would somebody lace drugs with that if it kills people? And so I don't know if you explained this or somebody else, and this just made it so simple for me. Like drug dealer A has cocaine, just regular. Drug dealer B laces it with a little bit of fentanyl. So where is the person going to buy their drugs? Drug dealer B, because they get a little better high.
Yeah, so they get a better high, and also a big driver of the increased potency of the drug supply lately is interdiction. It's cracking down on the supply side. It's the DEA seizing drugs. So the greater the crackdown, so to speak, on the supply side, the harder the drugs get, and that's because it gets riskier and riskier to transport them, and it's a lot easier to hide a brick of fentanyl that's this small than it is like a giant truck of heroin, right? So they make it very potent into these small packages, and then they can, spread it out as they're preparing it and make it go further and everything. But then it's not always mixed evenly. So you might have one batch of, heroin laced with fentanyl that's not very strong, and then you might have another one that's like 50% fentanyl, and so there's not consistency, and that's very dangerous.
Yeah, so scary. And I know somebody that her knew somebody that their teenager's drug of choice was Xanax and couldn't get it prescription wise. So he got it on the street and it had fentanyl and killed him.
Yeah, there's a lot of counterfeit pills out there. So
I was
kids
with.
might think they're safe because they're taking something that came out of a pharmacy, but it didn't really. And you
Yeah.
can't tell the difference. There's no way to tell the difference between the
No.
ones and the real ones.
I was with a friend of mine this weekend who has three boys that are in elementary school or that, elementary and younger. And she actually has Narcan in her glove compartment because she, part of a nonprofit she was involved in, was trained on it. And her oldest, who's in elementary school, she had to have a discussion like, do not take anything from any of your friends, food in the cafeteria. You just can't. And that's so scary that we're at that place. But
And it's very different because years ago, you used to be able to kind of let your kids experiment a little bit more. It wasn't quite as dangerous, and the stakes weren't as high, but now it really is. You can't afford to mess around and try things and make mistakes. And
This
that's
is
just kind of the world
deadly.
we live in right now. And it really impacts the way that family members support their loved ones with addiction, because it used to be, I don't think this was ever particularly effective as a tactic for helping people. But you've probably heard the term rock bottom and heard of that concept where, you can't fix people, you can't save them. They have to want it for themselves. They have to hit their rock bottom, whatever that might look like. It's getting, it's losing their license, it's getting their kids taken away, it's getting fired, their wife leaves them, whatever it might be. They hit that bottom and then they finally kind of break and realize that they need help and get and ask for it. And a lot of people, that is part of their story. I'm not in any way discrediting that that is a part of a lot of people's recovery story, but you hear it a lot of times in support groups and shared amongst people who have been on the supporting side, a family member, a spouse of somebody who has an addiction, that you kind of have to wait for that. There's nothing you can really do. You just have to let them hit their bottom. But rock bottom right now for a large percentage of people with specifically with opioid addiction is death. So we can't wait for that. That's not, that's not like a tactic for helping people. That's a worst case scenario, and you pray they make it out of their bottom. But we got to raise people's bottoms. We got to meet them where they are. That's the concept of harm reduction. And families have a lot more power than they realize. You will hear a lot of people talking about the power of even sometimes just one dedicated loved one who did not abandon them in their time of need. And we do have a lot more power. And again, like, we can't save people, we can't fix people. That's true, but we can support them, and we can support them while holding our own boundaries. And that's not an easy tightrope to walk. But we have a family support specialist at the Chris Howard Foundation who's trained in doing just that, helping families to kind of walk that line between keeping themselves healthy and sane and having boundaries, and then also, being there for their loved one.
Yeah, and I love that you have that family support, because often that's what it is family or friends that are like, okay, there's an issue that we need some help. And how do you find the support? And I haven't really talked about this on the podcast, but I think I'm going to, because I'm passionate about the awareness. And I know we've talked about this, that I lost a good friend a year and a half ago to a fentanyl death. And he wasn't an addict, and he just dabbled in a little cocaine here and there, never around me. So the shame for me was, hey, I didn't touch it, I didn't do it. And so I didn't want people to associate me with that. But that had nothing to do with me. And he just dabbled in one day, as you said, he had no tolerance for it. He thought he was invincible. And just like you, finding your brother, his son found him on a Friday night. Nobody had heard from him. By Sunday morning, his son is like, nobody'd heard from him, so they went and checked on him and found him dead. And so that's, I think, one of the reasons I'm so passionate about this awareness. Like, you just never know. As you said, it's just that occasional sometimes, and everybody, the age I am and people that I know that dabbled here and there just as a little fun in college and stuff. Yeah, it's deadly.
Well, thank you very much for sharing that, because I think that's an important point to make, that not every situation is sort of that extreme stereotype. The substance use disorder and drug use runs the gambit. It's a huge spectrum, from people who are, shooting up 6 times a day to people who just dabble here and there and everything in between. And I think if we only have these sort of train wreck representations in our minds, then we miss somebody who's at risk or struggling way, way earlier on in that continuum, and we maybe miss some opportunities to help them. And, like my recovery, I never went to jail or had any kind of legal repercussions. I never, I was able to function and maintain pretty good grades and all of that. So most people didn't really know either. And I didn't need to go to treatment to get into recovery. I did it on my own. A lot of people do that. And there's kind of this whole like middle group of, you know, people on that continuum that aren't really talked about. And I like Brené Brown for that reason. I don't know if you're familiar with any of her works.
Very much so.
She's got kind of the same story where she was like, she would go to a AA meeting and, you know, see all these people who were throwing back handles of liquor every day. And she's like, I don't belong here. This isn't for me. But it looks so different for everybody. And I think it's important to talk about all the different ways that it can look.
And I think your comment about the solution is not the addiction. I wrote it down, but
the addiction isn't the problem. It's the solution to the problem. Yeah.
And so that was Brad. He fought depression and insecurity and you know, you go to the woulda, shoulda, coulda. He didn't live local to me. And, you know, I should have seen it, that a friend of his that he started hanging out with that had had lots of drug issues and in and out of rehab, he was spending more time with him. And he was like not showing up for things and not doing things. And, you know, I got mad because I'm like, all right, fine. But should I, woulda, coulda, paid a little more attention. But
well, there's always those regrets, and I have a lot of those myself, some of them with Christopher. And then unfortunately in January of this year, my estranged husband passed away from cirrhosis. And this is what I do for a living. So you'd think, well, if anybody can help save somebody, it would be me. But I mean, you can't force people to get better if they don't want it. And you can't beat yourself up for the rest of your life about, you know, the woulda, shoulda, couldas, like you said. It doesn't do any good. All you can do is love people and support them and share resources. And I did all of that, you know, and you didn't know. You don't know what you don't know. And so
insights. And that's why I wanted you on here, and I'm so passionate about it. And eventually we'll have you as a guest as a lunch too. But I think we need that awareness and we need to let people know. And so if you're listening to this, watching this podcast, share it with somebody. You never know who's got something going on. Even if you think they do or you don't, share it with somebody. And just, you never know who might know somebody that this could make a difference and keep people alive and fight this fight. So how can people get involved, support you, you know, be there? Well,
we have,
I know it takes money.
Yes. Yes, there's that. And we just got hit by a bunch of federal funding cuts. So I won't lie. We're definitely needing the money part. If that's something that you have resources for, we also have volunteer opportunities. We have our annual spring festival coming up on May 31st. It's called Hope Fest. Really fun day. Free or suggested donation for the ticket. We do barbecue. We're having a cornhole tournament, games for the kids, face painting, cotton candy, all of that. Live music. We also have a gala in the fall that we encourage support for. And you can call our warm line or check us out on the website at thecaf.org.
Okay. Well, we will definitely share all these resources. And, you know, if people want to get involved, I encourage you. But as I said, share this with somebody. You never know.
Yeah, so. You never know.
All right. So my dad connection, that kind of a sad connection, but the year that your brother passed away is the year my dad passed away. So you're in heaven hanging out, doing cool things probably. Just being a heart of service, you know, making a difference. And then I would also say, you know, from a positive area where my dad really made a difference is when my younger sister was born with Down syndrome. And he's like, we can make a difference and we can do things and we can get resources, and had to figure all that out, which wasn't easy. So how would you encourage somebody else? You say, why not today, to live their life, to pursue their dreams, to be brave, or to get help or share with somebody else?
I don't know. I mean, life, what I've been thinking a lot about lately is just how short life really is. My brother died at 21. My son's father just passed away at 40. And so I don't know if this is encouragement or not, but just living in the moment and making the most out of every day and making every second count, because you never know, when is going to be your last. And so I've been spending more time outside, kind of trying to soak in everything. And just also with what I've been doing with my running and training for this half marathon, at first I was like, I don't know if I want to do that again. I haven't run long distance in a decade. I'm older. I'm like had a kid. I don't know. And I remembered something I'd seen a while ago that was, don't ever be afraid of the amount of time it takes to do something, because the time is going to pass anyway. And I don't know what it was about reading it when I did, but it really struck me. And so I hold on to that sometimes, and maybe that'll be encouraging to someone.
Love that. It's interesting. I interviewed somebody yesterday for my podcast, and she had a why not today moment about getting a new dog for their family. And her, at that time, 8-year-old, they were discussing, it was like, they had to make a quick decision. And she said, I'm a little anxious about whether we want to do this. And the 8-year-old said, well, you're going to be anxious if you do it now or wait a week. You're still going to be anxious. So kind of the same thing. It's going to be hard. And every day you start, you're that much closer. So the why not today message is, you just got to start. And I think what you said about living your life, I'm so passionate about. And, after my losing my father, and then when Brad passed away, it's like, we need to live our life, and we're not promised tomorrow. The people that have cancer in this long, drawn out death, but sometimes it just happens out of left field, and you had no idea. So the why not today mission, or it's, I'm calling it a movement, to live our life, to be brave and pursue our dreams.
I love that.
Because, yeah, we're not promised tomorrow. So, well, thank you for everything you shared. And I hope this makes a difference in at least one person's life, and I'm sure it will. So, everybody for watching or listening, thank you for joining us on this inspiring journey. Why Not Today, as I said, is more than a podcast, it's a movement to help you live boldly, make a difference in your life and the world around you. And every day is an opportunity to say, why not today? So, be courageous, follow your dreams, and know you have permission for the next step starting now. And you can find out everything you want about Jenny in the show notes, and her website. I'll share it. And then everything about Why Not Today is whynottodaymovement.com. And you can join the email list. And I'm starting to do some workshops and coaching to help people, to support people in living their dreams. And so thank you, Jenny. And remember, everybody, say, why not today?
Thank you.